Let's Tarantino this, as I like to say, and we'll start at the front and work our way back. Or we'll start with the end and then go back to the beginning and then work our way forward.
Dizruns Radio, episode 503 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick, before we dive into today's episode, just want to let you know that this episode of the show is brought to you by my friends over at knucklelights.com. I've talked about knucklelights before in the past. If you've been listening for a while, you've heard me talk about them. They've sponsored episodes. I just raved about them because I really do like the product. I use them regularly. They're just great because it keeps your hands free, but still allows you to see. And if you find headlamps uncomfortable, which I do, it's the perfect blend where you're not holding something in your hand. I can still hold the dog leash. I can still hold the water bottle while also having my knuckle lights on and being able to see what's in front of me. And, if you're thinking to yourself, yeah, but Diz, I don't really need to be able to see what's in front of me. Like I run, it might be dark, but there's street lamps and the road's pretty smooth. Like I can see where I'm at. I get that line of reasoning, which I used to kind of fall into as well. But don't forget that not only do the knuckle lights or any lights, but specifically the knuckle lights help you to see what's in front of you, but they also help cars to see you as well. And newsflash, cars will win. A car versus a runner, car wins every time. So get yourself a good pair of knuckle lights. Wear them when you're out there running, pre-dawn, post-dusk, so that not only can you see the road in front of you, but that cars can see you as well. It's a huge safety feature. And like I said, they're comfortable. They'll fit over your gloves if it's cold weather, wintertime, no worries. So knucklelights.com to order you a pair or check out your running store. They may be in some local running stores as well. So thanks so much to Knucklelights. And now let's go ahead and get on with today's episode of the show. Hey guys, today I'm catching back up with a woman that honestly I didn't know at all before our first chat, but now I definitely consider her to be a very good friend of mine. She's a fellow running coach, prolific blogger, and a soon-to-be mommy, which was really exciting news not too long ago. And I'm definitely looking forward to going a little round two today with Ms. Susie Lemmer. So thanks for coming back and joining us again, Susie. Really appreciate it.
Oh, you know it, obviously.
I just have a feeling this is going to be a hot mess. But before this thing devolves into whatever it's going to become, I just want to let everybody know, again, if you haven't checked out Susie's blog, suzlife.com is the website, SUZLYFE.com is the website. And that spelling of Sue's Life is going to matriculate through social medias, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, all the same place at Sue's Life. Instagram is the redheaded stepchild here because of reasons we discussed in the first chat. The handle there is the_Sue's Life, again, SUZLYFE. If you missed the original, you can find it probably just on the web because it's probably cycled out of your podcast app by now, dizruns.com/219. But never fear, you can still listen to it in your app because this was a best of episode in July of this year, dizruns.com/435. So episode 435, if you're scrolling through, you want to catch up on the original episode, interview, conversation, whatever you want to call it that we had. And if you want to catch up with any of the links from today's show notes, I'm throwing all kinds of numbers at you, dizruns.com/503 for this episode. So now that all of that hoopla and excitement is out of the way, Suze, let's kick this thing off. Same thing as before. I'm going to ask it and see if maybe the answers change. And if not, then I'm going to throw you a little bit of a curveball. And I may throw you the curveball anyway, because I love you and I'm allowed to do that kind of stuff. And it's my show. So anyway, the original
and
question.
You know I love a curve. You know I love a curveball.
Exactly. So the original question, as always, Miss Suze, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
Okay, so it has changed a little bit. I would still say that the marathon is my favorite, because back that it used to be that it was the half marathon's my favorite race to race, and the marathon's my favorite one to kind of run. Mm-hmm. I'd still say that I'd say now that the marathon is probably my favorite, also because, as we will get into, it's kind of going to be my, you know, the thing that I may or may not be having to bid adieu to. But I am really gotten into like the 10K distance. I really am loving that kind of 6 mile and there about kind of that distance has been really good for me because, you know, through what I've, the various injuries I've had, but also just as we will talk about the change in how I've been able to run, it's, you know, it's something that's very doable for me to train for when I can train for it. But it's also just, it's, you know, and it's something I can run with my husband. I think that's the other big thing is that my husband and I were able to run and race a bit together last year. And that was just really awesome for him. Like he's got some structural things from back in the day, just old sports injuries. And he tends to get injured when he's running like further. So that's like a really good race distance for him where he can kind of kick it. And it's just something that we can share together. So I think for nostalgic reasons and like emotional reasons, that has become probably my new favorite race distance.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Curveball time. What's the least favorite distance to race?
Anything shorter than that.
Fair enough.
Just anything where I have to like kind of sprint. And I'll tell you what, I like a five here. Let me rephrase. I like a 5K. My problem is more with how 5Ks are often put on. And this is not to say that I don't love the running community and love how everybody's getting out there and doing the 5Ks. Mm-hmm. It's just that when you happen to be doing a 5K, if you're really racing it, it can be really difficult to, for example, get yourself situated properly. Then you're going to have people that are lined up in the 7 minute mile that are walking the entire thing. And I know that in their mind, they're like, well, I need to start earlier because I'm going to take longer. And I understand that. But the problem is that then you get bottlenecks. So it's like, it's a much more frustrating distance from a logistics standpoint. And, but I also just really don't like sprinting.
It's a tough one. And you know, sometimes, and I've seen it before where, you know, it's somebody's first race. So they don't know, you know, there's no thought at all. Yeah.
Like the more, I am very much one of those, like, I want everybody to run. I want everybody to do this, but it was kind of the same thing that happened at my first marathon, Marine Corps, which ended up working in my favor was the fact that I sort of seated myself a little further back, but there were people that were just, you know, not seated correctly because that marathon is self-seated. And you get held back a lot. For me, it ended up working out because it held me back. But when you've got a race, that's like a marathon, you can often make up that type of time, or, you know, you can at least change your strategy enough that it will work. When you've got a 5K, like you just don't have the time.
Yeah, especially if you've been running for a bit and you're 5K, like, you know, you're only going to PR in a 5K by maybe 10 seconds or something like that. If you've been running for a while and you're like every second counts, and yeah, you get stuck behind a little bottleneck of people that knowingly or unknowingly lined up where they shouldn't, like that it's all over, game over. It ain't happening that day.
Exactly. And like I will say though, that one of the most fun races I ever had, even though I was in, I got really pregnancy pissed right beforehand because, my phone stopped working and I really wanted to take pictures. And then I was like, well, we can't even get home because now I don't have a wallet or any way to get in home. But, I had so much fun. We did the Stan's Donut 5K, which was magical because on two spots throughout the course, they gave you mini donuts and they're my favorite donuts. And then they give you a giant donut at the end. And when you're pregnant, that is the best thing that has ever happened to you.
I would argue that not being pregnant, that still might be one of the best things that could happen.
I mean, but then imagine your elation when you are pregnant and that still happens. And you're like, oh my God, it's literally the lottery.
It's just donuts. It's the manna from heaven. Just the donuts are just showing up and I am not going to ask any questions. Just going to do what needs to be done and take these things down.
Oh, for sure.
So, since in the last year and a half, as life tends to do, things have changed quite a bit. So, I just went back and listened to our chat to kind of refresh on where we were because like I said, I mean, we've talked a lot. We've been a part of a mastermind. We've kept in touch. So, you know, that does kind of blur the timeline sometimes. It's like, well, when did we have this conversation and when did this happen? So, way back when in February of 2016, first chat, you were kind of just coming back from, stress fracture, a sacral stress fracture injury, getting back into running, had kind of come to grips with the fact that obviously you weren't going to run Boston that year, which you had qualified for. That was a big goal. Then you got injured, couldn't do it. here's the worst question in podcasting. What's new since then, Suze? Other than the fact that you're pregnant, which we referenced. But I mean, there's been a lot of ups and a lot of downs, a lot of change and whatnot. And I'm fine talking about any of it or all of it. And I just don't know where to start. So I don't know. I mean, where do you want to start? Let's let you take control.
Let's Tarantino this, as I like to say. We'll start at the front and work our way back.
Okay.
Or we'll start with the end and then go back to the beginning and then work
and then
our way
piece
forward.
It in the middle. Yeah, exactly.
So what's kind of ironic is that I'm in a fairly similar position that I was in the last time we talked, in which I'm coming off of a stress fracture. This time it is the same side, and we actually are figuring out a bit more as to why this is happening to me. Part of it is I have all the reasons, like I go into it on my blog. If you kind of look at I did a series on Crohn's disease and also on training for a marathon with a chronic illness. But I do talk, if you search stress fracture on my blog, there's a couple of posts that will come up that kind of detail this a bit more. And also if you just look for the post called Damn It, that is the latest one where I was just like, I'm sorry, I can't keep this in anymore. What's so funny is that I'm so good at listening to my body, and my body's really terrible at telling me when it's hurt. But so I have a femoral, I'm coming off of a 6 week stint of crutches for a stress fracture at the junction site of the femoral neck and head on my left side. My last stress fracture was the sacral ala, basically where your sacrum inputs into your pelvis, also on the left side. And part of the reason that this keeps happening on my left side in my hips is that the left side of my pelvis kind of cants. So it's slightly twisted. And when I do a lot of strengthening, but it's one of those things, like it's just something that like I have to have help fixing. And we're realizing more and more how much I need other help, like outside help, putting particular pressure on it to kind of help fix. And that was actually something that kind of came up yesterday when I was at physical therapy. And I was like, okay, this is starting to make sense. Okay. So another reason that I potentially have gotten this injury is that I did get pregnant, and it was, we'll get into this. It was a journey for us. We had to do several rounds of IVF. And this was actually our third transfer, but I had to take 7 weeks off of running. And during that 7 weeks, it wasn't even that I came back too fast. I still came, like, I mean, one of the things I literally based like my business on is like, I take on people that have stress fractures that need to come back like safely. And part of my problem was that the way I put on weight during pregnancy is I kind of do it like a little kid having a growth spurt, like where they put on 15 pounds and look kind of chubby and then all of a sudden grow. Like I put on 15 pounds very quickly. So even though I came back and was running super slowly, super chill, I was also on my feet all the time. I was I was still a personal trainer and a server. So I'm getting like 20 to 30,000 steps a day. And like, even though I did taper up to that, it's still just that and probably some pelvic things going on, plus the relaxant in your ligaments due to pregnancy, just was kind of, you know, whatever perfect storm trifecta that needed to occur. But, I mean, at the same time, this spring during April, like I ran a 60-mile week with no problem, had no lasting effects from that. I just at the time didn't have an extra 15 pounds on me when I was doing it. And now, I mean, my hormone story is a fairly long and complicated one. My body just essentially doesn't produce them, which is another big bone issue thing. But I basically, my body was like, you have estrogen, let's put on all the weight possible. So it just was kind of like slurping it up wherever it could get it. And so since then I think right now I'm at like about, I've put on about 36 pounds. We were hoping I'd put on like 20. So it's, you know, it's like one of those things where I would be tapering off regardless. And I just kind of had to take an earlier taper than I would have liked and then get to walk around on the bitch sticks, as I call it.
Yeah. The crutch is no fun for anyone, let alone, when you're pregnant and have all that extra stuff going, all the extra body changes and the hormones. And like you said, it doesn't make for a good time.
I will say though, that people finally, like when I was on crutches, when the sacral fracture, and I was like not pregnant. Like people would never get out of my way. Nobody would help you. Nothing would happen. When you're pregnant and you're on crutches, people help you. So my advice to anybody that's on crutches, like get a fake bump. Like I don't care if they do something. Like people will open doors for you. People will give you the seats on the bus. Like it's pretty amazing.
So there are still a few good people in this world, as long as you're injured and pregnant. But if one or the other, then you're on your own.
Yeah, as long as you're injured and pregnant and look slightly volatile, like they'll help you.
So, since we started with the stress fractures, let's stick there for a second. I think that's
for sure.
A good place to talk. Like you said, I mean, as a coach, that's something that the negative of having to deal with the stress fractures is that you know what it takes to deal with the stress fractures, how to come back slowly, how to try to listen to your body, how to even sometimes, you know, you don't even know if you're doing too much or too little, but you probably want to err on the side of the caution when you're coming back. So with those, some of those things in mind, and especially maybe with the pelvic stress fracture, the pelvic hip, you know, kind of the upper stress fractures, I think in running, we look more at foot stress fractures, maybe shin tibial stress fractures from shin splints and things like that. But farther up the chain, we don't look at them as much. What kind of things in your two experiences, obviously I'm going to assume they're both a little bit different, but what were the signs and symptoms that like something was seriously wrong? So if somebody's got some pain, bone pain, and they're worried, like, I don't know, maybe this could be a stress fracture, especially if it's kind of in one of those types of places where it's not quote unquote common. What are some things people should be looking for?
Absolutely. And I think that this is where I'm one of those people that's absurdly attuned to my body. So I was able to actually catch it pretty early last time. When I had the sacral fracture, it's a very rare fracture. It's becoming more common because of especially women that have like the female athlete triad and people running longer distances. But I mean, at the time when I got it done, like there wasn't even like a part, like a code for it on the paper. Like you had to look up the code to like say what the injury was. But one of the things, and we treated it as if it was basically a disc dysfunction for a month and probably made it a hell of a lot worse. This time we were able to at least catch it a lot earlier. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that let's talk a little bit, something that they both have in common and something that I've had also two stress reactions, and these were lower. So these were lower chain. These were a little bit more typical because I pronated ankles, ran in wrong shoes, did a hard workout, didn't turn out so well 2 weeks later.
Did all the things wrong, basically.
Yeah, basically. It was a really cool workout and they got some really good shots from it because it was like for a company, but yeah, I probably should have done that. So something that's fairly common is it honestly is going to present, or you're going to think it's presenting as soft tissue. Mm. And that is one of the things that can be really tricky about it. Something that I learned a bit in actually when I was going to see the chiropractor who was, I mean, they were great. It just was the wrong injury. Something that I learned through them was that bone injuries, you can kind of resolve them or they'll hurt slightly differently from time to time. Like it's not a consistent, like when you have pulled your Achilles tendon is going to hurt whenever you activate it. Like whenever you activate that muscle that pulls on that tendon that, you know, yanks on the bone, like it is going to hurt pretty consistently. Like it might take it a couple of minutes before it does it, but once it does it, it's going to do the same thing every single damn time. With a bone, you're going to have the muscles are going to be firing, but it's not always necessarily going to respond exactly the same way. And that was always kind of the thing that I look for is like, is the pain consistent or not? And that's not to scare everybody out there who's like, well, sometimes my leg hurts, sometimes it doesn't. The kind of the nature of the pain shifts a little bit. With my injuries, I tend to have, it feels like soft tissue. Like in this case, it hurt like in the high hip flexor kind of groin pelvis, like pelvis area. And then I would also have some pain down my leg into my, like my lower quadricep. What it really to me is the kind of iconic, this is going more bone, is that you're going to have a pain that kind of echoes. And I say echo because I don't want to say that the pain radiates, because that implies a nerve issue. And so I made the mistake of using the wrong terminology, which is, I think, part of the reason we were treating it as a disc the first time. What I would say, it's kind of like you're standing in a hall, like it's as if someone is standing inside your bone, inside a hollow room, and yelling, and you feel this kind of dull ache that echoes out through the bone. So like in this case, because it was in the femoral neck, the way the femur is structured is you have the long shaft, and then you kind of juts over to the side, and then you have the ball that goes into the ball and socket. So where my fracture is right where that the little shaft intersects with the ball. So what would happen is that when that fracture would be activated, it would echo out into the exterior of my hip. And that was a big clue that something was wrong. Now, you often hear about the jump test. Mm-hmm. I passed the jump test.
Wow.
I could single leg squat. Like, I was literally standing in the physical therapy, like at the PM&R, so the physical medicine and rehabilitation doctor's like office. And like, I had severe pain that then dissipated. And by the time I got to him, I was like, I can jump on one leg. Like, I'm essentially coming in here for like a courtesy call, but with my history, like, I'm not going to play. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah. And then like, he even was like, yeah, I don't think we have anything to worry about. And then 2 days later we did an MRI, and the next day you told me I had a stress fracture. So when I say that the pain can be inconsistent, it can be very inconsistent. It can also be very inconsistent. You could just be in a lot of pain the entire time. So, I mean, it can go both ways. Bodies are very peculiar beings. What really struck me and was for me the absolutely crowning moment when I said, this is not ligament pain, because at that time I was 24 weeks pregnant. We were like, this could be ligament pain from my pelvis changing. And I actually said that on the blog. We were like, we're hoping that's what it is, but we don't know. I went to my 24 week appointment. They were like, yeah, this is going to happen. That night, the pain changed. And I started losing range of motion. Mm. And by the next day I called, I made an appointment, and I just continued to lose range of motion, continued to lose strength in the leg, because that, in my experience, has been the indication for a bone incident as opposed to a soft tissue incident. Like, a soft tissue incident hurts unless you've torn it and literally torn it in half. But like, if it's a strain, like, it hurts, but you can still move your foot. Mm-hmm. I literally couldn't take my leg past about, like, if, you know, bring your leg all, say if you normally have like a 90 degree range of motion, I probably had a 60 degree range of motion. Mm-hmm.
Real noticeable, really, really obvious.
Very noticeable. And plus, since I was a server, I was like limping around the restaurant, which looked really cute. And I lost, literally, it felt like something was disconnected in my soft tissue. Mm-hmm. And that was really the crowning moment for me. When I had the sacral fracture, I didn't lose strength, but I also wasn't dealing with quite such a large system. When it's, you're dealing with your femur, like it is attached to so many different things.
And it's a major weight bearing bone, like the time. So yeah, it's pretty important.
Like, I mean, it's going to be really obvious. The pain, I had way more pain with the sacral fracture because it is more just like activated with a lot of little itty bitty things, like different movements, because essentially I basically broke the lowest bone of my spine as it enters my pelvis. And if you think of just, I basically didn't twist my waist for about 6 weeks and as I was healing it. But also, like, I couldn't really lift my leg up very high, like, because they would start to encourage like the pain. That one was much more pain-based as opposed to a strength-based. But I will also say that it was a very similar in the sense that like the bone impacted bone, which then echoed. In my experience, when I've had a soft tissue impact a bone, it doesn't echo in the same way. When you have bone that's impacting bone, because you've had those fracture sites that are interacting with each other, you get this kind of echo, and it's more of an ache as opposed to like you're being knifed in the back. It can develop into being knifed in the back. So you want to catch it while it's still at that ache stage.
Right. And that echo thing, I don't know obviously about the people listening, but like, I'm having a hard time, imagining what that must feel like, but I got a feeling, my assumption is that it'd be one of those things that like you said, if you're kind of in tune at all to your body and what you're telling you, what it's telling you, if you know, heaven forbid any of us that haven't had a stress fracture ever get one down the road, like that would be a big clue. If it just feels kind of echoey, which maybe you can't imagine right now, but if you ever have that feeling, like that might be a good sign to go get it checked out ASAP.
Yeah. So here's how I would describe it. I would say it's okay. So pretend you're on like a long, like apartment hallway. I'm in an apartment building. So that's why I'm thinking about it. If you're standing like our apartment's all the way at one end, you stand there and you yell down the hallway. Imagine those sound waves traveling down like ka-chunk, 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 as they go down the hall. That's what it feels like, but within your bone. So right. It goes from like your pubic. Basically for me, it felt like it was starting my pubic, like my pubis bone, and echoing out to basically the exterior of my hip.
Wow.
But so it would literally feel as if somebody was standing there yelling and these sound waves would carry out to the outside. It wasn't like, oh, the entire bone hurts.
Mm-hmm.
It would like hurt in succession as it went down, like as each kind of piece impacted. It's one of those things like where you're like, this is not normal.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't like, I've had, you know, as a long distance runner, we've all like almost all of us have had these other little aches and pains, and you worry about them, but you're also like, okay, yeah, well that's like in the middle of the back of my calf. It's probably the Achilles like or soleus insertion.
Yeah, just like, hit it with the foam roller a couple times, a little easy stretch, and you know, warm up a little better next time.
Shove some KT tape on it, like, you know, for a little extra support if you think you need it, and you're good to go. Or give it a couple of days rest. This is something like when you've got bone really impacts the amount of strength that you have. And that was when knock on wood, before this, had only broken one bone, like before these stress fractures, I'd only broken one bone. And that was when I was riding my horse and my horse fell on me. And the way that and also to be fair, like I've ridden horses for like 2 decades. So it wasn't just like a freak accident. I mean, it was a freak accident, but it wasn't like everybody should be terrified of riding horses.
Right.
He was also coming back from an injury. So I understand. But like when that happened, I remember being told that the way that you could tell that you had a broken bone was that your bone, like basically things below it felt like dead weight. So it's kind of a similar idea in the sense that you know that you've not lost any strength, but like if somebody were to come over and try to like, you know, do something like put their hand on top of your knee and have you press against their knee, I mean their hand, like with your knee, and like try to do like a, you know, try to do hip flexion or extension, like you just like physically can't do it. You're just, it's like you're like, I used to be able to do this for, you know, with 60 pounds and now I can do it with like 20.
Right.
And there's just this disconnect.
Yeah. It's frustrating. And like you said, I mean, every injury is going to be a little bit different. Every person is going to be a little bit different, but, it's, you know, on some level there's a lot of similarities, a lot of things to remember. So hopefully nobody ever has to deal with this, but you know,
please,
odds are somebody might have to deal with this at some point. So hopefully this will help trigger a little bit early in the process to go get it checked out. And like with anything, if you can catch it early, it makes the recovery process a little bit easier, and maybe not easier, but shorter, a little bit more time.
No, it's, the thing is too, is that I will say this 6 weeks on crutches versus the 6 weeks on crutches I spent for my sacral fracture seemed numerically like completely different. I was in a lot more pain with my sacral fracture, but like it was, that was the one where like if you were like, do a jump test, I'd be like literally middle finger.
Right.
But I will also say that for me, in terms of recovery and helping with recovery and the mindset of recovery, which is something that I've also written a lot on, it sounds terrible to say, but it's kind of like once you kind of accept what's going on and for me, once I stopped, like kind of took the pressure of Boston off, especially because at the time we were like, well, this person's had this injury and they came back and were able to do it within like this many months. You have to kind of accept that everybody is different. Everybody's going to heal differently and you just can't press it. Like every time you push the like that envelope with your recovery, when especially when it comes to these types of injuries, you are doing yourself a disservice and you're setting yourself back. This is not a time to be like, I'm going to, you know, really kind of push that boundary and see if I can raise it a little bit, like we do with training, like where you kind of push a little harder and then you kind of pull back. Like, this is not the time to do it. You always focus on what you can do. That, like, for me, it was, I could crutch places. Like, this time around, like, I, you know, like, it was like, okay, well, you can crutch places. So I would, you know, like, I would be like, there's a cafe, I'm going to crutch to that cafe. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, it feels like forever when you're doing it. But, you know, it's what gives you, like, we are athletes. I can live without running. I cannot live without movement. I cannot live without activity. I didn't this time feel the need to like get to the gym and do weights like I did the first time. But I also just am in a different, very different standpoint in my life now in terms of what's driving me. But you figure out, you've got to get outside. If you kind of succumb to the fact that like of what's going on, like you have to accept it, but at the same time, you don't have to give in to it. Right. And it's a hard line to walk. You absolutely allow yourself to have. I had a little weekend after I found out I had a stress fracture. Oh my God. And my mom was coming in. So, I mean, thankfully my mom came in. So I was sitting there being a blubbering idiot. My mom was there. So that actually helped. But then like that Monday, it was like, okay, I let myself have my pity party. Mm. Let's figure out what I can do. Let's get out there, because it also too, it's like the first time you do any workout, the first three times you, like the first 3 days of using crutches suck, because your hands hurt. You're not used to moving that way. You know, everything in your body, you're just in a crabby mood. You know, it isn't fun. And then, I mean, by the time the week was over, I was like, okay, we can do this. This is fine.
Right. Yeah. We adapt quickly. Not always as quickly as we want to, but we figured out. So like you said, things are a little bit different now. I want to get into that, a little bit more in just a second, but first got to pay a bill real quickly. Thanks again to, the good folks from over from Knuckle Lights for sponsoring today's episode. You know, being able to see when you're out for a run, is kind of a good thing. If you're running, you know, pre-dawn, post dusk, which this time of year, you know, getting towards the middle of December, end of December, the days are short and the nights are definitely long. So if you're getting your runs in, outside, it's dark, you should probably take some type of light with you. It helps you to be safe. And obviously, you know, if you're running where cars are, it helps them to see you, which is a big thing, because, car versus you, the car wins every single time. So have some lights, make sure that you can see where you're going, make sure other people and other traffic, other vehicles can see you as well. And if you don't like having a thing around your head, which I'm not the biggest fan of, knuckle lights are great because you don't have to actually hold them. They just strap around your fingers, around your gloves, around your mittens, whatever it might be, depending on what the weather's like where you are. And you still have your hands free, so you can still hold a water bottle. You can still hold your dog leash, whatever you might need with you. Hands are still free. You can see where you're going. Knucklelights.com is the website, and they're available at a lot of running stores as well. So if you have a running store in your area, check it out. Support the local guy, and get yourself a pair of knuckle lights, or put them on your Christmas list and get them under the tree or in your stocking here in another few weeks. So so obviously, again, Suze, the stress fracture, the having to deal with another one, you know, that is a big change. But the biggest change, and the most positive change, the happy change, is the little Yoshi that's growing in your womb right now. She's just going to be here not too much longer, I think, right? Sometime, isn't it January, something
months.
Like that? Yeah, a couple more months.
January 23rd. Oh, and so that people understand, Yoshi is what we call the bump. And also, like, when I was doing IVF, like, you know, you've got these eggs that you have that then become embryos. Whenever we implanted an embryo, it was Yoshi, because Yoshi was my favorite character in Mario Kart. Thank you. I am at the beginning of the millennials, not the really obnoxious later ones. And Yoshi was my favorite character. I was always Yoshi, and it has a little egg that it often throws at people, and it lays eggs, but it also eats everything in sight. So I was like, yeah, it's perfect.
it is definitely perfect. And, and I'm right there with you. Like, I don't know that Yoshi was always my favorite, but I definitely relied on Yoshi several times playing Mario Kart back in the day. So we're as per usual, we're on the same wavelength more often than I think we aren't. But, one thing that I don't know that I've ever mentioned on the podcast before, so this might be an exclusive, I don't know. But when Rebecca and I were trying to have a baby, we dealt with the infertility thing for like 4 years, and we never got to the IVF part, that we were everywhere up to up to that point and trying to, you know, decide if that was something we wanted to do or look at other options. And thankfully we didn't have to, and Addison's here and, you know,
and the cutest
and the hottest messes, but you know, that's another conversation.
She and I are hot messes together. That's why you like us.
Yeah, that could be true. But with you and your story and your and you and your husband's struggle to get pregnant, start the family, because that was something that I did refresh on when I was listening to the past episode today, was that you mentioned that was something that you're kind of getting towards trying to start the family.
Right.
How did running help with the struggles? Because I mean I know we were in contact regularly when you guys mm-hmm. were going through the first and second rounds of IVF and you know the hope and the excitement and like, oh my gosh, maybe, and then obviously the disappointment when the eggs don't take and going through the other side, you know, having to deal with that process. How did running, was it a stabilizing, how did running impact all of that whole process for you?
Well, and absolutely, infertility is a really interesting experience, and it's one that, it's kind of like my Crohn's. I wouldn't wish it on anybody, and I wouldn't pick it, but it also has made me exactly who I am. Mm. And is, you know, I'm just so beyond grateful that I have this little thing that is currently actually doing. We say that she wears goggles and a swim cap and that she frequently loses her goggles and like has to like get them back on. She's literally doing that right now. When I had the sacral fracture, it really changed how I looked at running and how I viewed running. And in a lot of ways, it kind of prepped me for this perspective that I had that of running that carried me through what became, for us, it was about, we were trying to get pregnant for about 2 years, knowing for about a year and a half of that we would have very little success. Mm-hmm. And because
was that related to the Crohn's, or was there another reason?
It is related to the hormones. Okay. My family just has not great hormones. If you're a dude and can't handle period talk, I'm sorry, but I'm actually not sorry, because you need to be able to handle period talk. I have never had a normal period ever. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what weight I am. One of the things that Crohn's does is it does also screw with your hormones. My mom has always had, you know, she had periods of amenorrhea, you know, and she didn't have Crohn's. She had a normal weight. I have had periods of amenorrhea both during flare, usually as a result of a Crohn's flare, because I will end up dropping weight quickly. My body goes under a lot of stress. Mm-hmm. And when your body does that, it triages, and that's the first thing to go in my case. And then it's kind of like I run basically at postmenopausal estrogen rates. Mm-hmm. It's just that, like, even the healthiest I've been, like, the last time I had normal periods was during marathon training. So marathon training for me is actually, like, usually what we use to, like, help me put on weight, because, as I've said before, like, I know how to train for marathon. I know how to fuel that body. Mm-hmm. And that's usually when I'm at my healthiest, because I'm taking such good care of myself. But irregardless, we went into it being like, we basically have to prep the body, make sure your body can handle being off of certain medications for the Crohn's. Mm-hmm. Once we actually, like, we started talking about doing the mastermind thing, and also we did my podcast right before or right after I had my colonoscopy that basically showed that I was in near remission, that we pulled me off birth control, and actually that, summer I actually had a mini flare because of stress. So it's like, stress is very, like, people, you know, it's becoming more and more obvious in more and more studies how big stress is a, you know, can really affect you. But we knew that we had to try to get me to ovulate. And one of the things I asked my doctor, who I have every faith in, because he was much more of a scientist, I was like, I want somebody who's going to give it to me straight and be like, this is like, either you've got a chance or honestly you don't. We knew adoption could be on the table, but you also really do kind of still hope that you can potentially have your own kid. And so one of the things I was like, I am not asking you this because I'm desperate to be able to run. I'm asking you this because running is a huge part of my mental stability, because I have depression, clinical depression and anxiety. It's a huge mood stabilizer for me. And it's also just, it's my me time. And he was like, you should be able to run basically until like certain parts of IVF you're not going to be able to, because of like, I'll get into this in a little bit, but there's some physiological changes that happen that they just don't want to, you could risk an actual injury to yourself physically by running, and by doing certain things. But he was like, doing Clomid, doing all that stuff. Like, I don't want you training for marathons. Like, basically, like, you can't go crazy, but, like, as a mood stabilizer, absolutely, as long as you're keeping it, you know, within a certain, like, a reasonable level. And a reasonable level being basically, I would say, like, that's probably when I fell in love with the 10K. And I wasn't doing speed workouts. I was more just kind of running for running's sake. But that was when I really fell back in love with, like, that distance. Because my normal run, like, during marathon training, like a quote, like, just like a daily run would be like 8 miles. So like my new like daily run was like 6.
Right.
Or like even my long run would be like an 8. Like or 4 to 6, and then like long run would be an 8. And I would run 4 days a week. And just really just getting out there just to be out there. And I wasn't this, I would coach, I was still coaching on weekends. So basically I was running with them and they were doing half marathon training. So I think the longest I ran was like a 10 miler. And I did one half marathon, during that time, but that was before things got really serious. So it was kind of like, I was doing this and that was my swan song. And then we were focusing on this, when you're doing IVF, and different doctors tell you different things as well. So I really want to put that out there, because some of them really don't want you doing anything essentially the entire time. And others are like, yeah, you can do it up to this point. I was essentially cleared to run and to do high impact exercise until a certain, basically a number of days into the cycle, when they're of the, basically the, when the classic like IVF shots cycle, like when you're doing all the shots to get you to ovulate. Because what happens at that point is that your ovaries are stimulated and they grow larger, and you risk, which for many people are at a great risk for what's called ovarian torsion. And if you've heard of testicular torsion, it's very similar to internal, and they have to, and sometimes they have to go in and take out your ovary. And I wasn't really going to risk that. So what I did is running would be up to that point was kind of helped with my anxiety, and just kind of, it also just gave me that routine that I needed, because there were so many other changes going on. And then when I was doing the, when I was at, during that time period when you're kind of at risk, I would go for walks. I would walk to my doctor's, because it's about a 3 mile walk. So I would just walk to the doctor, and then I would take like a bus home, because I didn't want to overdo it, but I needed that. It was my hour of exercise, during January in Chicago, because that's how I work. And there was one time, like literally my quad muscles like froze, and I had to like kind of run across the street. I was like, I can't pick up my legs. Oh my God. So, you know, you take that with what you will. But then the thing that running gave me, what was so interesting is that the days that we would hear back, you do your beta test, which is when they, when you do IVF, you, it's a blood test to see if you're pregnant. They tell you, they're like, seriously, it's called the 2 week wait. And they're like, seriously, don't pee on a stick.
Right.
Like, don't do it. Take your blood. It's far more accurate. And so like, that's what you do, is like, you're literally just waiting. And that was the thing that was so like, you got, I, it's so weird, cause it's like, I hear your story and I don't know if I could even go, a lot of people don't know if they can go through IVF. I don't know if I could go through what you guys went through, because at least I knew how to date every single time when I knew if it was going to take or not.
Right.
And I had a process laid out in front of me. So like the first time was like all about the process. The second time was a little bit more focused on the result, and it was devastating when we, when it didn't work. And the third time we literally were sitting outside. We did a, I ran to my frozen embryo transfer, by the way. and they like want you to be super hydrated. And I was like, well, I will. But I like ran there. I was like typical runner style. I was like, this is my last run for God knows how long. It puts me in a good mood, and we need every, all the good juju we can get. But, and also at that point, like I wasn't at risk for any of the ovarian things, because I wasn't after an egg retrieval. But the, I just remember I've never had a, I've had runs that have been cleansing. I've had, but I've never had a run that cleared my soul as much as that first run after our first negative result. And I don't know if it was the music, because normally, like, I literally got to a point where I really just listened to podcasts, but I was like, I need something else this time. And I was, I can't even honestly even tell you which, what I was listening to, but I got, I ran this, and I was gonna, I was like, okay, I'm gonna run 4 miles because I haven't run in however long, and we're just gonna take it easy. And I got out to this point, which is my favorite view of the city. And it was like, for whatever reason, it was like that moment and like that point of the, like, of a song. And I just, like, all of a sudden it was just like literally being doused in cold water. And it was just that moment where I was like, okay, you take a deep breath and then you turn, that was my turnaround point as well. And it was like, okay, so I turn around and I go back to home. We take the time off that we need to, and then we do this again. And then the second time after we got the no was a lot more emotional. I didn't run that day. I didn't care to. What was actually pretty tough was that my husband was actually out of town for a conference. And I, that was terrible for him as well. And then the next day I went out and I took my run, and it just, it was my deep breath. It was that moment of being like, okay, something, you know, it was still saying to me like, okay, physically, like, you still have power, you still have some sort of strength. There's so much we can't control. And anybody who's, and I've written about this too, like, you know, marathon training, being a runner, has prepared me to deal with IVF. Like, there's actually an infertility, because, you know, you could do everything right and you still don't get the result you want. You could do everything wrong and get the result. And, like, I mean, we, they, I have friends who, or I know people who are like, you know, they basically had successful sex and we ended up having successful science and unsuccessful sex. But you could do, you know, it's, you just try to put yourself in the best position possible for this. And when I ran during IVF and in those times in between, it essentially got me ready for these periods that were almost like a mini taper leading up to a big result. So it's like, you put in this work, it's methodical, you have a routine, you have a structure, it keeps you going. And, you know, I didn't do speed work because we didn't want to, like, exacerbate anything. But, I mean, I also just wasn't looking to get fast. I was like, I'm just running because I can. But I also had some of the first actual anxiety attacks while running that I've ever had. Like, I remember I was running and I was like, out of nowhere, I just started, you know, you just start to catastrophize. And I was like, okay, you take that, you realize that it's not normal. Just like when you have a run where you're like, I cannot, like, I usually run like a 7 minute mile and I can't even run like a 10 minute mile today. Like, you know, it's an exaggeration, but it's, you have these off days, but they also get you through because you know that you've got that chance to do another one in a certain amount of time. So it really gave me the structure, and it helped give me the perspective, and it helped me just process what was going on. And sometimes it just helped me not think about anything at all. Because you're sitting there staring this thing in the face, and it's, you've never wanted anything so badly in your life, and you're also terrified of it. And well, anybody who's about to become a parent understands that, but it's also just like, you know, I have friends now that so many people deal with infertility. And that was one of the things that I really was exposed to during this whole process. We all deal with it differently. For me, I needed to not be on websites talking about infertility, you know, about like, we've tried for 7 years and it's never going to work. I needed to kind of, basically, you have to run your own race.
Right. Right.
And that's, I mean, marathon training in a nutshell.
Yeah, no, it totally is. What was, and I don't think we've ever had this conversation, but what was the first run after the successful result? What was that like?
It was hard.
Yeah.
It was really fucking hard. I hadn't run for 7 months or 7 weeks. And during those 7 weeks, so we actually had a scare earlier, early on. We had what's called a subchorionic hematoma, which is, and they found it at the first ultrasound. So it was like, congratulations, there's your baby. By the way, you've got a lot of blood in your uterus and it raises your marriage rate. And you're like, ah, God, wait.
Right.
And then 2 days later, I started hemorrhaging. And was the other thing too, is that like I started hemorrhaging, and like when you start to hemorrhage and you think you've lost your baby, and this was our only frozen embryo, so it was like you will have to start all of this all over again. Like you just, it was crazy. And but it was also one of those things like where I just was like, you know what? If they tell me I can't run the rest of this pregnancy, I will not run the rest of this pregnancy. Like I'll do whatever I have to do. Because I mean, like short of, you know, something really ridiculous, but like, I mean, I'm not going to like cut off my arm, but I would consider it. like if they gave me a good enough case, then I would probably do it. Let's be honest. But the first run back, it's the longest mile I've ever run in my life. Mm-hmm. I think I ran 2 miles, and I want to say that I was doing it coming home from like a coaching thing, and it was the longest I ran out and back, that's what it was. Okay, it was the longest 2 miles I've ever done in my entire life. And then the first time I ran 3 miles, they were the longest 3 miles I've ever run in my entire life. And because the other thing too is like, you know, your body is totally changed. And as we discussed, like I put on weight pretty quickly. I didn't show it very much, but like there was just weight there that wasn't there before. And I wasn't worried about my time. Like I really didn't care. But it was also one of the coolest things because I was like, this was what we'd always dreamed about. And then being able to take the run, like, and then like, that's why it was so cool. Like when we did the Stans 5K, cause I was pregnant. And so like, there's this picture of me and Alex running. And it's one of my favorite pictures of us like ever. Cause he's totally oblivious to the camera because he doesn't see anything. And I'm looking straight at the camera and like so excited. So somebody just texted me. But it was like, that was our first race photo. And, but it was also like, I had at the time, like, I just looked like I'd had a little bit too, it looked like I'd already had a Stans donut.
I was to say, yeah, you already had your donut.
I already had my donut. I was just going to cram some more down my throat, which I was totally okay with. But it's like, it was one of those things. It was like, that was our first family photo. And you know, the fact that it's doing something that like Alex was a lifter, he wasn't a runner, and now he loves to run. He still lifts, but you know, that's become something, and it's something that we could all do together. Like one of our first, the first thing that I picked out was the Bob stroller so that I could go run. And it literally, like, it was one of those things like where I don't really care if I get back to super fast running. I just want to, or like super long running even. I just want to be able to go on our family runs on Saturdays and, you know, have that activity together, because that to me was like, has become such a huge part of my life. And also like, if Alex has to put me in the stroller and push me, he might have to.
And that Bob is heavy duty enough that it won't be even a problem. And it'll smooth sailing. Let me tell you.
Oh yeah. It's the rules. And it was one of the things I was like, it's a splurge, but it's going to get used. Like, even if I'm not running super like long miles with it, like it's going to get used.
And I'll tell you what, like it gets used all the time. I mean, whether we're running or not, like if we're taking the stroller, that's because it just, you look at it and it just starts to roll. So it's the easiest thing to move and navigate. And you're going to be attached to it.
Especially because I'm like terrified of stroller running. Cause like my friends who've done it, they're like, it's so hard. And I was like, oh my God, I'm like scared of stroller running. And I'm like, I've got the Bob, we'll be fine.
Yep. Exactly. The only problem is if the traffic gets in the way, but you just gotta, you know, be aware, navigate, you'll be
fine. Luckily we have the lakefront, so we have 20 miles of uninterrupted trail.
Yep. You are going to be good. It's exciting times, and I'm definitely looking forward to hearing the news when she finally gets here. I'm so excited for you and Alex. It's a tough thing. And, you know, the infertility thing, just like everything, just like the injuries, just like everything, like it's all a unique and individualized, journey. And you can rely on other people or hear other people's stories and talk to them, but you don't know what it's like and how it affects you until you're in it. And
I think that what I also like want to say to anybody who's going through this is, if you choose to go about it kind of alone, that is, you have every right, but know that you are not alone in going through it. Because I I mean, my mom has even, like, it's opened her eyes to how many people have struggled with it. Because my mom had some infertility issues. But, like, she mentioned that I was going through IVF. And the number of people that have reached out to her. But, I mean, the people that have reached out to me through telling my story on the blog and, like, you know, my fears of it. And also, like, you know, potentially just, like, even talking about, like, the process of it. Because, like, we have so few people know what the process of IVF is like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and to some it continues to be terrifying. And to some people, they read that and they're like, okay.
Right.
I'm about to go through this, but I can do that. Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, it just like with marathoning, the way that everybody's body reacts is different, but you can always find somebody else who can at least commiserate with you in some way. And if nothing else, like one of the other posts I did was what to say and what mm-hmm. to say to someone going through infertility treatments and what not to say. And you just have to let them feel that the way that they're feeling. Cause some people, you know, they're going to try to tell you what emotions to have. Mm-hmm. And it's like when you find out like what you're going through, it's like missing a PR, but having a good race. It's like, okay, well, I'm at the other side. I'm in one piece, but that wasn't the result I wanted. And someone being like, you know, telling you like, well, you should be thankful that you had the PR or that you did, that you like still had a great race. And you're like, right. Well, that's not what I'm here for. And, you know, we all process things in different ways. And just to know that, you know, you're allowed to process it however you're processing it. Mm-hmm. And if you need help, get help. I have a therapist. And I'm also, like, I mean, I'm on drugs as well because that's just what my body needs. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, we all have our different ways of going through things. But know that you're not alone.
Yeah, and just to put a bow on that, I can't remember the exact number. You might know it more offhand because you're much closer to being still in that infertility world than we are, obviously. But what is it, like 1 in 5 or 1 in 6 women, something like that? Yeah. I mean, it's way more common than anybody thinks because people don't talk about it.
I think it's 1 in 8 families.
Okay, yeah.
So or it's like partner, like basically 1 in 8 people that try to get pregnant, like deal with some form of infertility. And infertility, I believe, is considered trying for over a year.
Yep. Yep.
That without success.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's not something that gets talked about like a lot of things. It's just something that doesn't get talked about. It's way more common. So, it was an eye opener for me. And, you know, like we've already said, we're blessed and thankful for you and Alex and, can't wait for that addition. So before we wrap up here though, Suze, I would love to maybe, end on some fun running something or another.
Oh Lord.
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll see what happens here, but, literally the bullet point says coaching talk. So, you know,
let's do it.
Yeah. You know, like a lot of people obviously that are listening to the show, are runners at some level or another, but looking for ways to improve, looking for things to you know, PRs or run new distances or avoid injuries or whatever it is, but they're somewhat sure. competitive with themselves. Last time we talked, one of the big takeaways two of the big coaching takeaways that I got from you, that I've passed on to clients that I've used myself were, to always make good choices, which doesn't always mean to push hard and dig deep. Sometimes you just got to know it's not your day or your body's not responding. So you got to back off a little bit and that's a good decision to make. So make good choices when you're out on your runs. And, the tip about not using your music until you absolutely need it. I love it. I will say that I tried that, at a race last year. And, my plan was to not hit the music until mile 20, but I was like at mile like 16, I was like, all right, like I'm still feeling good. Like I'm kind of by myself. There's nobody around. Like, I'll just grab the music now. And, that blew up in my face. Cause I got the music. I was so excited, went way too fast for the next 4 miles and crashed and burned. Like it was going out of style for the last 10K. But
so what you're saying is don't listen to anything I say.
No, what I'm saying is have a plan and freaking stick to it instead of just flying off the handle mid race and deciding to do something different than what the original plan was.
I still swear by that thing. It has helped me innumerable times. And I will say this, sometimes when I'm racing with Alex, as much as I love my husband, he's not as big of a talker, which is fine because I am not a big talker either, but he's even less of one. And sometimes I'm like, I just really want to put in music for 2 seconds because I really, like, I'm struggling here.
Yeah.
Well, and that's when I force him to speak to me.
Yeah, there you go. I've noticed it in long runs, in training runs just by myself, where it's like I'll listen to a podcast or an audiobook, and at some point, like, I just want my mind to turn off and not have to like try to think and process while I'm still running. And yeah, like switching to music, and it's just like it all just kind of becomes a blur, and you're able to go and finish the workout. So it's great. with those two that we've already kind of covered that are two of some of the really best tips that I've had on the show, I think, and when it's all said and done, any other good bits of advice from the time as a coach, time as a runner yourself, things you've experienced that you know, it maybe isn't something that's the standard advice, the run of the mill things that everybody always talks about, you know, hydration, nutrition, fueling, all that kind of stuff. But and maybe it is something related to those things. But any other good bits of wisdom we can leave people with today?
That's good. Let's see. Yeah, because you know me, I don't like to do the normal things, so I'm going to stray away from that. I think that something. Okay, so here's something that, you know, we hear a lot about interval running, mm-hmm. and, you know, we hear a lot about it with regards to like the walk run method / run walk. Especially when you're coming back from an injury, especially when you're coming back from any sort of stress related injury, but really any injury, don't be proud. Mm-hmm. And don't say like, well, I always continuous run, so I'm going to walk run this or run walk this. I have been working a lot of my athletes this year have been ones that have been coming off from injury, and they they were always like, I have one who's I adore her, and she, you know, she can run a she generally averages between a 7 and 8 minute mile depending on distance and what we're doing. But it's like one of those things, like we started back with run walk, and it has really changed how, like, it brought her back safely. We took our time with it. And the other thing, that's another thing too, is that like, you can push your body. I call it the glass ceiling. You always want to put butt up against the glass ceiling, except for when you're dealing with a stress fracture, just don't do it.
Right.
But in terms of progress, you want to try to push that ceiling slightly higher each time, and then you want to back down. Mm-hmm. But like, you push it up a little bit, and then you get away from it before you actually push through it. And that's what allows you to kind of continue to progress. But really, interval training, like when you're coming back from an injury, when you just need a light day, if you're a continuous runner, if you are if run walk is what it works for you. And the thing is, like, if it works for you, you own that. Mm-hmm. You are a runner. And if anybody tells you otherwise, you have them call me and I will set them to rights, because that I will not stand for that. But even if you just need to change something up, run walking and doing those types of intervals is fabulous. Another thing, walking hills. So we always hear about hill workouts and how they're so great, but some people don't really necessarily have hills around them. Or for example, you know, just the way that their week is set up, it just isn't conducive to, like, it could be, you know, if it's icy outside, I really don't suggest you go run hills. Mm-hmm. But walking hills has a ton of huge benefits. It's another great cross training activity. You know, you can do it on your lunch break, but you want to talk about if you like want to jack your heart rate up, get yourself on a treadmill and walk hills, because I'll tell you what, you will be surprised at how difficult it is, but also the different muscles that it uses. Mm-hmm. It's going to make your glutes work so hard and it's going to make them actually perk up and be like, oh, I'm supposed to be doing this. What? Because when we get on treadmills, we tend to get very hamstring heavy. Mm-hmm. And so it's even like, it's the way I do all of my, if I'm doing a treadmill run, I start by walking hills,
you know,
my glutes first.
Yeah. And on that note, I have a client who, you know, as the winter months are starting to creep in, the weather's getting less enjoyable to be out on the bike.
Jen?
What's that?
Is this Jen in Canada?
No, this is not Jen in Canada. She's just hardcore, and she's going to be out running no matter what with icicles on her face. But another client who, you know, regularly does cross training on his bike. But as the roads get icier, it's darker, things like that. It's not as safe to be out, you know, cycling on the backcountry roads, you know, pre-dawn, post-dark, or post-dusk, things like that. He got into walking on his treadmill with it jacked up on the incline, and he couldn't believe how difficult it was. So yeah,
I thought it's so hard.
And because it's so hard, maybe that makes the treadmill just a little bit more tolerable. Like because you're actually having to focus, like it's not just completely mindless. Like you really have to focus and you are going to feel it in the glutes. So, I don't know too many runners that couldn't benefit from a little bit of extra glute work. So,
and the other thing too, is like, you don't have to jack it up and be jacked up the entire time. Cause mm-hmm. I mean, you want to think about it, you're not running up a hill the entire time. Right. So, and the other thing, I mean, as much as I wish, I mean, unless you have one of the really sweet treadmills that also does decline, I mean, you're going to have to switch it up. So I like to kind of, like, one of my hill workouts that I have my runners do is, you know, you basically make it a progressively steeper hill, and then you basically bring the hill back down. But I mean, you're essentially always walking a hill. And another good thing that you can do is do this slowly first. Like, you're going to like literally put it on like 2.0, turn around and walk backwards. That's really good conditioning, because if you think about it, when we're landing, especially when we get to those sprint parts, like towards the end, you're running a lot more on your toe. So this is also, it's an eccentric move for your calf. It's conditioning your feet to land on your toe. You know, like when you're starting to like move into those kind of more forward like times, but it's amazing eccentric conditioning for your calves, which is something that, I mean, that's how we land.
Yeah. And I'm going to play off that again. I love how we go back and forth like this. It's crazy, but, I've done that before actually in a race. You know, like if you start to get to that point where like your body is just like, you know, things are just hurting, you know, 16, 17, 18 miles deep in a marathon, like this sucks. I don't want to be here anymore. Like everything's just hurts. Turn around and, you know, whether you're walking, whether you're running, however, whatever you feel comfortable with, but go backwards for, you know, 100 feet, 200 feet, something like that. And I liken it to the idea of like, if you take a string or a rope or a cord and you keep twisting it the same way, eventually that cord starts to knot up and get shorter. It's just because of all that extra twisting. Your muscles are doing the same thing. You get 20,000, 30,000 steps deep into a marathon. Like those same muscles have been doing the same thing over and over and over again. They start to tighten up. They start to fatigue. If you turn around and go backwards and make every muscle work in the opposite direction,
yes,
you take some of that tension out. Like, and you don't have to do it for a mile. You don't have to do it for a half a mile, literally a minute, 2 minutes, whatever. But do that and you turn back around and like, boy, it's not going to maybe last you for another 10 miles, but you are going to feel a difference for a couple of miles. And then maybe you do it again a couple of times. Like I've had a lot of success with that. So that's something to consider on a long run, a long marathon, whatever.
Just change
go,
it up.
Yeah. Go backwards for just a hot second. And boy, it makes a difference for how you feel.
Oh yeah, no, it makes a huge difference. And I think, cause I mean, especially like if you're doing a lot of the marathon majors are so flat and I say the marathon majors because, you know, they just have such giant fields, but if you're going for a Boston qualifier, the chances of you fatiguing like your IT bands because your glutes basically stop working it's very high, because you tend to be running on super flat courses. I'm in Chicago, so I'm very familiar with that one.
Right.
Butt kicks in the middle, high knees in the middle, do something different, shimmy side to side for a little while, you know, like kind of gallop, like, you know, kind of clicking your heels together. Anything that you can do to change it up and basically create glute engagement, almost essentially create your own hill in the middle of a flat, is going to basically get your body to wake back up. And it's going to, it's like dumping cold water on your muscles, like in the sense of being like, wake back up, get back in line, refocus. And as like you said, it's not going to give you unlimited more miles, but especially like, when you're getting to those tough points of the marathon, you're essentially, you know, it's a battle between mind and body anyway. So it gives your body and your mind like something different to do, something different to focus on. And it just, it makes such a difference.
Yeah. And you're going to get a few looks, but who cares? You're running your race, right? So, you know, So what if people like, what the hell is this guy doing?
And honestly, if they're looking at you, what are they going to think when they see the guy run by in a hot dog costume? Like,
right. Exactly.
Like you're the least of their worries.
Exactly. So yeah, this is why I put, you know, just put coaching talk on the thing, and we'll figure out something to talk about. And there's three or four new strategies, new things that I don't think I've talked about ever on the show before, hopefully you can implement, you know, the walking on the treadmill if you're so inclined, or if you're looking for a good workout that doesn't seem like it should be, turning around, going backwards, butt kicks, all those types of things in between or during a, during long run, it really does make a difference. So, Suze, I know we could keep going, but maybe instead of making this a 2.5 hour episode, maybe we'll just not wait a year and a half to do a round three.
I think that's a good plan.
Yes.
And hopefully next time we'll talk stroller running next time.
Yes, we can talk stroller running next time for sure. But before I let you go, something new that wasn't around 100 or I was going to say 150 episodes ago, but that math doesn't work out. It's a year and a half ago. Was the philosophical question at the end. So I'm not gonna let you skate by without getting a little bit philosophical.
And you know I like to wax poetic.
I know you do. So this is why I'm bringing this in now, so that we'll at least have a chance to be, you know, coming in under an hour and a half on this episode. You know the drill, because I know you listen to the show once in a while. It's open ended, long, short, however you feel like answering this question is fine by me. But with where you are now. You know, stress fractures, pregnant, starting to looking forward to the next chapter of life with the family, you and Alex and the little one and you know, everything that you've gotten to this point. What does being a runner mean to, or no, let me, I'm going to take that back.
Okay.
I'm going to go color off script on the philosophical question. I hate to ask the future questions, but I'm going to ask the future question. What do you think running in 2018 is going to look like for you?
That's a good question. I honestly think it's going to look much the same it does to me now, in the sense of it is a part of my life, but it doesn't, I mean, I guess pun intended, it doesn't run my life. Mm. We go through these periods. Running has helped me so much. I'm so grateful for it. But I also know now that I can live without it if I have to. Mm-hmm. But I also know that it's there for me when I need it. For the most part, it's like running to me is now, it's like having an amazing friend. It's like a marriage, like where you know that, you know, you may not always get along with them. Sometimes, you know, you might need time apart. Like, luckily, I mean, Alex and I are very solid in that way, but it's, like, you know, we don't get into giant fights necessarily, but running is a relationship, and I've really started to treat it like that. And it's kind of, you know, those recovery days are recovery days for a reason. There's a reason why Alex and I, like, we, you know, we're very independent people, and sometimes we just need to do our own thing. And it's not like, well, I don't feel guilty for the times like when we need to do our own thing, because I know that we're going to come back together and have, like, you know, it's going to mean even more when we come back together. I would love to have run this entire pregnancy and to be like, yeah, I did it. I was the giant lady that looked like she had a basketball on her stomach, like running down the road. That would be fabulous. But at the same time, I can respect running and what it will continue to give to me enough to know that I don't need it in that way right now. Mm-hmm. If I don't, one of the big questions for me right now is, will I run another marathon? Is my body okay to do that with the stress injuries I've had? And I know that I'm a marathoner. I will always be a marathoner. But being a marathoner doesn't make me who I am. Mm. I can run and not be a marathoner. I can live and not be a runner, but I will always be a runner. I will always be a marathoner, if that makes sense. So my hope is that I continue to respect running for what it is, what it can give to me. I want it to use it to, you know, help my little girl learn to be a healthy human being. If she likes running, fine. If she doesn't like running, that's cool. Mm-hmm. But I want her to, you know, see that mommy and daddy are active and that they take great joy from being active and that it helps them to be able to do the other things that they like to do. And I think that's really what it is like, how can I continue to use running, maybe not so much to help me, but to help my family and my future? And how can also the running, you know, help me continue to be healthy so that we can hopefully grow our family and our future?
Why I love the philosophical question, because it always just kind of, it's a great place to put a bow on things. It's always cool to get different perspectives on different things. And I'm not even going to try to keep talking, because I'm just going to muddy the water, and I don't want to do that. So Seuss, like I said, it's been too long. Thanks for taking the time. Once again, guys, if you haven't been there already, SuzLife.com, SuzLyfe.com, at SuzLife on everything but Instagram. On Instagram, it's at @the_SuzLife because she's that important that she gets the in front of her name.
There's only one of us qualified to live the SuzLife, and that's me. And when I've just now added the at Limmer Zoo. So if you want pictures, like gratuitous pictures of my dog and my cat and my future baby, like that's where we're at.
That's where they'll be as well. So we'll have everything linked up. If you want to catch the first episode that we did to get some of the other backstory, dizruns.com/435, or just find it in your app. It was out in July of 2017. So you can scroll back, find it and give it a listen. So, my darling, thank you for taking the time. Have a great rest of this year. I can't wait to see the excitement, the blessings at the start of the new year with the baby. Looking forward to obviously keeping in touch and certainly doing this again at some point, not too much farther down the road.
Always a pleasure, always an honor. And everybody out there, just, you know, keep doing what you do, keep running, keep walking, just find what you can do and just love it.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. Hope that you enjoyed the round two with Susie as much as I did. I know it's a little bit longer episode than normal, but I feel like knowing her, knowing myself, we could have kept going. So you probably not the last time you'll have heard that voice on the show. We'll probably do a round three at some point as well. But anyway, as per usual, I would love to know what stood out to you. What was your takeaway from the conversation today? What was something that we talked about that really got to you, that really made you think for a second? For me, I think it kind of came from the discussion about Susie's infertility and her IVF treatments, and how at that point in her life, she talked about running as being still just a part of her routine and kind of one of those things that just really, you know, kind of helped her to relax, help her to smile, to you know, she even said like cleansed her soul at one point. And I think for me, and I don't know, maybe for you, but definitely for me, there are times when I lose sight of maybe all of the other benefits of running and just kind of let the competitiveness, my competitive nature take over. And I want to run faster, want to run farther. I get frustrated at the lack of progress. And this was just a good reminder that running really can be good for the soul, for us as runners. It is something that helps us beyond just our scratching our competitive itch. When life gets crazy, and it always gets crazy, it gets crazy for all of us from time to time. Whether it's you know, whatever it is, there's no reason to try to say one thing or the other. Just when it's crazy for you, when you're stressed and at wit's end, struggling with something, maybe it's something like infertility, maybe it's something completely different. But in those situations, maybe it's a good idea to pull back from trying to race, from trying to take our running too seriously, and just allow running to be that thing that just kind of helps get us through. Just kind of is there. It's something that, to borrow a phrase from my friend Susie, that just cleanses your soul. And I know I lose sight of that. And this was just a good reminder, and this was my takeaway. So, with that in mind, what was it for you? What stood out to you from this episode? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet @DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. And as always, you can head over to the show notes to this episode or any episode and leave comments there, feedback, takeaways for this episode, DizRuns.com/503. So with that, let's go ahead and put a bow on this thing. Thanks once again to Knucklelights for sponsoring this episode. Again, knucklelights.com, or at your local retailer, local running store, you can get yourself a pair there as well. And they're probably on Amazon because everything's on Amazon, right? But if you're looking for a light solution to help you see and help you to obviously be seen as well by traffic, by cars, I can't recommend Knucklelights enough. And if you get them from the website, let them know that you heard about them here. It's always helpful to let them know that they're advertising dollars are paying off, which helps keep them around and helps keep the money flowing, which is always a good thing, and helps to keep bringing you guys more sponsor opportunities as well, and discounts and deals and giveaways and all the things. But anyway, let's officially put this one to rest as we're getting closing in on 100 and, or an hour and 20 minutes. 120 minutes. Ooh, that would be That'd be really long. That might be too much. But an hour and 20, hopefully you made it. Thanks for making it. If you listen to this, obviously you made it to this point. So thank you for listening today, guys. Until next time, please be well, all right? Take care of yourselves, and we'll talk soon. See you guys.